Welcome to Uncle Nene's Nerdcast. I'm your host, Nathan Fletcher, a.k.a. Uncle Nene. It's going to be a great show for you today. We have an incredible filmmaker who has a really interesting background, decades of entertainment, music videos, a really incredible resume and experience. Some of his notable works include Red All Over and Ebony Hustle. It's a great to have you on the show. Welcome to the show, John Wayne S. III.
Thank you, sir. I'm always humble when people allow me on their platforms, because I figured if you said yes to me, you probably said no to somebody else. So I'm thankful for that.
Well, thanks for coming. I appreciate it. We end up, you know, we're trying to be a specialty of sci-fi and fantasy, but we get a lot of filmmakers and production folks. I have a background in more unscripted production, but when we get a filmmaker on, it's actually a lot of fun because I think we all are fascinated by how movies are made, and I love anybody who's decided to make a decision and make that art, create that. Thank you for coming on the show. I read that my first, you know, question is, do you get tired of people making the joke, any relation to John Wayne, the cowboy?
I probably get it. If my name comes up or I have to introduce myself, I probably get it almost every day.
Almost every day, yeah.
I tell all the time is that, and a lot of people don't know this, is that John Wayne's real name was Meredith. And yeah, the studio changed his name because they couldn't have a cowboy named that. So I come from a long line of John Wayne. So as far as I know, they probably stole it from us.
Right. Absolutely. So I read that you actually started on a path to become a doctor before you got nudged toward film. Tell me a little bit. How did that transpire?
So growing up, I had a, I'm going to say this, you know, a lot of times in life when you meet young kids and you look at them and you see where you think their life is going to go, people start to portray what they think they should be.
Okay.
What their path for them. And so growing up, I had teachers and other people saying, oh, you'll make a great doctor. You'll make a great doctor. And so you kind of get pushed in that particular direction of this is what, you know, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. Because you're young, you really don't know. I mean, what I wanted to do when I grew up, I wanted to be Spider-Man. So, you know, you see how that kind of works out.
Yeah,
you know?
Naturally. Yeah.
So I was a pre-med major. And the summer that I had to, this was my plan. My plan was is that I was going to study geriatrics.
Okay.
The study of older people. And I was going to flip that into a political career because I figured once I got out of medical school, most of the baby boomers would start to spend money and they'll start living. And I was going to open up all these communities with my name on it. And that was going to be name recognition. And then they would vote for me because they lived in the community that
right.
I owned. That was my plan.
Yeah,
so the summer before I had to pick what medical school to go to, a production manager gave me a call and said that she had left a message on the answer machine about working on the indie film. And I honestly, I don't remember doing it. She's like, yes, she did. Went back and forth. At the time, I was a manager at a self-parking garage and I had just lost my job. So I wasn't really doing anything. She said it for a second assistant director's position. I said, great. So I went in and talked to the first assistant director. I had like a suit and tie on already.
Yeah.
About 5 minutes into the conversation, he realized I couldn't help him do nothing because I know nothing about movies.
Yeah.
But a week or so later, she calls me back and she says, hey, I got this. You can't do that job, but I got a production assistant opening in the art department. Would you be interested in doing that? And she said they were shooting 6 weeks straight, 6 days a week, and like 16 hours a day. And the pay was $50 a week. And I said, yes, I'll do that.
Boy, ironically, what year was that? Around what year was
Jesus,
that?
You should tell me my age. This got to be like 90 something.
Okay.
Yeah, the 90s.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit of a long time ago. But ironically, just the way the universe works, the film was called Scenes for the Soul.
Okay.
It was director George Tillman's first film out of film.
George Tillman. All right.
You know, as he went on to do Men of Honor, all the barbershop movies, Notorious. But this is his first film out of film school.
Okay.
And I worked on that. I met some other guy, this other guy who didn't go to film school either. He went like this community workshop and kind of the rest is history. So I had kind of like being in the right place at the right time, you know.
That's great.
But I don't think it really kind of like cemented into my head that this was my path because, you know, I wanted to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because I don't like needles and I don't like people being in pain. So that's kind of a weird possession to be in. But I was doing a music video and I was sitting back in a van doing a music video. And I remembered an assembly program I did when I was in like third grade. And they don't really do too much now, but back in the day, they'll have a popular song and all the kids say what they want to be when they grow up. Okay. And so our song was the stylistics, people make the world go around. And so when they got to me, I said that I wanted to be a film producer. My mother bought me this Indiana head just like yours and a slate.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to be a film producer. Didn't think about that until that day I sat in that van. And I remember and I thought to myself, I'm doing exactly what I said I wanted to do in third grade. And that's when it kind of locked in, cemented that this is what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's incredible. What a neat story. Now, I think I never knew that I wanted to be in action TV production and creative production until I took a summer job graduating after I graduated high school. And I graduated a little bit early. I was 16 and I took a summer job for a production company. And I don't know if you remember this, but there was a Commodore Amiga computer called the Video Toaster. And it did computer graphics, lightweight. Okay, you do remember. All right. And so there
was telling our age now.
Oh yeah, we are. And the guy that was running the computer, he was at odds with the owner of the company. They didn't like each other. And so he goes on vacation and the owner tells me, this is how it was back then. The owner tells me he's on vacation for 3 weeks. If you can learn that computer while he's gone, you can have his job. And so I did. I studied that. I got into that computer. I learned how to do computer graphics and boom, that was my first job. That's how I got my first job. But yeah, it's funny, you know, and then later I fell in love with the business and fell in love with production and that was it. You have an interesting, produced over 200 music videos. I've made quite a few music videos in the Spanish music world. You've made 200 music videos. Tell me, how did you get into the music video business and what were some of the challenges that you faced in those early years?
The thing about music videos, when I started doing music videos, this is during a time where people, when they did music videos, they went to either New York or LA. There was not a lot of people in middle America doing music videos. I'm originally from Chicago, so I was in Chicago. And so after I had worked on that film, I met a guy who, like I said, he didn't go to film school, went to community workshop. And we decided we were going to do music videos in Chicago.
Okay.
And the first video that we did was a song called It's a Summer Thing. Okay. Doc featuring Shante Savage. We went to go talk to the guy about doing the video. He said, well, let me see your work. He said, well, we don't have anything to show. He said, well, I know you can do it. And he's like, well, you just have to trust us that we can do it. And I mean, there's some caveats to that, you know, some relationships and, you know, to give.
Yeah. Did he make you take a haircut for doing it?
The crazy thing about it, that this is like just the way the universe works. We would rent, because I come from film. I'm a film guy. Like, you get the film, you develop and process the film.
Yes.
So we knew a guy who would rent us a 35BL camera for about $200-$300 for the weekend.
Okay.
And then we would rent a Santa Liz's about $200 from this guy in New York. He would just send us his whole really beautiful lenses. He would just, I don't know, I can't even remember how I found him, and he would just send it to us. He's like, okay, just send it back when you get finished. You know, it was real like that. He was send us these lenses. And so we were able to do it. Then we get the short ends, you know, go to Kodak and buy all the short ends. Yeah. A lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, shoot in the daylight so you don't have to get a bunch of lights. Yeah.
Yes. Most of our videos, 95% of them was during the daytime. When you start going at night, they're like, hey, maybe going into uncharted territories here. Well, what you doing there? You know, but for the most part, that's what we did. And so that video was very successful. We got a couple of awards and just mentions for it. So it was very successful and it kind of propelled us to do it. During that time, people were doing music videos because they're big now. But back in the day, they wanted videos for songs that weren't even on the radio. I mean, people were spending like $20,000, $30,000 for music videos for songs that weren't even on the radio. It was just crazy, you know. And so we got an opportunity to do a lot of videos, you know. What really happened with me is that I was just producing at that time. And then the guy who was directing, he had to go work on somewhere else, go work on a project. And so I had I signed a deal with this label to do three music videos.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I going to do? So it was kind of out of necessity, because if you had asked me the week before I directed, I'm like, oh no, I don't want to do that. But at that moment, it just came clear and I just jumped in and did it. It turned out really well. And so I've been doing it ever since then. I don't do too many music videos now, just because people don't spend a whole bunch of money on it. Now, for the movies, because we do original soundtracks, I will do a music video for that. But for the most part, I really don't do a whole bunch of, or I either, lease it out to somebody else to do it and not just produce it.
Yeah, it's funny, talk about early days in music videos. We started shooting them on 16 millimeter film because that was all we could afford. And then I remember when we graduated to shooting on 35 millimeter film, I felt like, wow, this is, I've arrived. I have made it,
Yes.
shooting on real film, because I started shooting on video. And then when you get to film, you are, next level, and
Yes,
people
yes.
today, they don't know what it's like to shoot on actual film where you're just pretty much taking it on faith that you're capturing what you want to capture. Either the video assist tells you very little. It's like, check the gate. I hope we got it,
Yes. It's crazy how that is. I think some of the young filmmakers miss out on the process of
Right.
filmmaking.
Yeah.
The idea that, we don't have a lot of time for, like, oh, let me do that again. No. We're
Yeah.
gonna pra we used to do practice, practice, shoot. Practice,
Right.
practice, shoot. Be
Right.
sure this is what you want to do. And just like you said, as long as the gate is clean, you print. It's not until you get the dailies a couple of days later or whatever that you even
Right.
know if you got what you wanted, So
Yeah.
yeah, that whole process, I wish that we still had some of that process now, just so people can really be in touch with, the filmmaking process.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think there are pros and cons, but I think one of the benefits of coming from the era we came up when was you really had to know your craft well and be more precise in how you did things and really have a clear vision of what you want to do more than, well, I'm just going to shoot a bunch of stuff and then I'm just going to put it all in and then I'll, really actually tell the story in the edit bay, and
Yeah.
not have a very specific vision of this is going to happen. So, pros and cons, different ways of doing things. I did have a question about, how did you find your voice? There's yeah, eventually you find a voice, a perspective. I'm curious, how that kind of happened for you in your career.
I think over a years you doing a variety of different stuff. And for me, because I didn't go to film school, I didn't get that like formal training. I
Right, me
learned
neither.
the
Yeah.
hard way, And so you make lots of mistakes, and you think something is this way, then don't turn it the way. You make so many mistakes that I think I learned to, okay, it gets, even today, my voice and how I look at story, it's always about, every time I do a movie, every time I work on a media project, it's constantly involving, and I understand more. Every time I do something, I learn about myself as a producer, the director, and a writer. I learn about storytelling, and I learn about how to find ways to communicate what I'm trying to say to this particular person, because all actors are not created equal. And what you need to do to talk to this actor to get them to do certain things, I try to spend a lot of time with them, And so my voice changes a lot based off the projects I work on. I have a certain, I like telling stories from different perspectives that people traditionally don't see it from. And so my shots and everything are based off of that process of how to tell this story, in a way that people see it different. Like, for example, when I do drone shots, which back in the day were almost impossible, you couldn't do drones.
Helicopter, that was the only way you could get
Yeah,
the
the
shot was
helicopter,
in a
or the big,
helicopter.
yeah, you couldn't do it, but now you can do it. And so
Yeah.
when I do cityscapes, things like that, I try to go from angles of the city that people normally don't see.
Okay.
Instead of doing the traditional New York
Right.
skyline,
Right.
everybody's seen that. I try to come from different angles where people don't see it, and they'd be like, wow, I didn't know this city had that thing, So I try to come
Right.
from that angle to show something kind of fresh.
Well, you bring that up, and I think it's exemplified with your directorial debut, Red All Over. You tackled issues like gun violence and bullying. Those are pretty heavy issues. What inspired you to tell that story? What challenges, of handling such important, sensitive themes did you face when you were putting it together?
So I'm gonna tell you the honest truth about that movie. That this is
Okay.
the evolution of how they work. So they don't do it too much now, but back in the day, if you wanted to get traditional institutional financing, you had to get what they call as a completion bond. And the
Okay.
only way you can get a completion bond is that you need to have done a movie. So it's a catch-22. I don't know if I got, how do you do that? I want to get
Yeah, how
this
you gonna
money, but I
get
need to, they
Right.
this way of we now people.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, I need to figure out a way to tell the story. I need to get the money for it. So I started going to media companies, record labels, and I started pitching this idea that most people, when they go and look at listen to music, if they like a certain genre of music, they like rock music, rap, or whatever, when they go to iTunes, that's what they pick. They don't
Right.
traditionally go outside of that. That's what they do. I can show you, I will tell them, I can show you the way to get a new audience of people that listen to your music that normally would never listen to it, and that's not the normal genre. So we would take a social issue, wrap music around it. They're listening to your music. You're getting paid for the music. It works for everybody. Now
Right.
you got a whole new audience of people. People love it, thought it was a great idea, but people didn't want to do it because they were afraid. They didn't understand how it worked. They didn't understand how, like, if I give you this amount of money, how it, they just, because
Right.
that's not how, you know, movies and films and stuff like that. Today, now people understand it, but back then it
Right.
didn't. So I
Right.
found somebody who,
You were ahead of your time, really.
I think I've led the path to a lot of people that traditionally, and I tell them stuff and they're like, no. And then when I start doing it, even when I do product placement for movies, indie movies, people don't do that. You know, they just don't do it. And so I do it, and then, like, you know, but it's a whole nother conversation. So I go and found somebody that he said that I don't really understand this, but I believe in you. And I think that you can get this done.
That's
So
great.
that's kind of how it started. As far as the social issues, that was just probably me and my writing partners assess the strategy of trying to tell the story and also to invoke emotion. You need to be able to invoke emotion to the characters to get them to do stuff. The thing about I find very interesting about Red All Over is that when I go and talk to lectures and I talk to universities and groups about the movie, it's interesting how people have broken down that movie and the different families. I was doing one at this university in Atlanta, and one of the students get up and he starts to explain the families and all the different families. And I'm sitting there looking at him like, what families is he talking about? He's like, these five different families. And I'm confused because I wasn't thinking about that when I was writing it. But in the
Interesting.
process of doing that, I created this energy and this idea about this energy about how families communicate with each other's, what a family looks like, and things like that. And so we went set out to do a movie that tackled those issues, but in turn we started all this debate and discussion about mental health and how it affects everybody.
Interesting.
And it's just not one, we all kind of deal with those type of issues every day.
Right. That's great. Excellent. Yeah. Another project of yours, Ebony Hustle, made a little more recently in 2021. It featured a strong Black female hero. What drew you to that story, and how was it collaborating with a first-time director?
So, Ebony Hustle was the movie that I was not trying to do. It was I didn't set out. If you look at Red All Over, Ebony Hustle is not the obvious movie afterwards. It's like, how do you get from there to there? So the distributor of the movie came to me, and they had this idea. They wanted to do a movie about like a Foxy Brown character. But they wanted her, the caveat was they wanted her to be a cougar and like young guys. They want a bit of a Blaxploitation, Foxy Brown with cougar. I was like, okay, well, what is that? What is that? And so we came up with the character, Ebony Hustle, which is a combination about what they wanted and the story I felt like I could tell. And so it was, it's ex-stripper turns private investigator. It's almost kind of like, if you remember this, the Rockford Files, how when he got out of prison, he used all the people he was in prison with. So same thing, Ebony used all the people she was a stripper to help her solve crimes and things like that. So it came from a very small smidgen of what they wanted to do, their pitch to me creating this world of Ebony and being this strong woman lead character, telling people what she wanted to do and, you know, making rights wrong and things. It's almost urban superhero.
That's great. Interesting. I guess, my question is, when you look at your style and approach, are there particular filmmakers or films that have influenced you?
Yes. So I'm a big fan of Tim Burton. I do like
Excellent.
his style of doing stuff. As a consumer, I like the big budget blowing up movie. I love those type of, you know, tentpole type movies. But I do like when people take different approaches to stuff. And I like when directors do movies and they create these worlds that are so different, but you accept that it's the reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you a 1989 Batman fan of Tim Burton's?
So,
Or are you more Tim Burton Big Fish? Which
Edward
Tim Burton?
Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands. Oh, it's
I'm Edward
excellent.
Scissorhands. Scissorhands. I was going to say this about just DC and Batman. DC has such a large array of comic book characters.
Yeah.
I wish they would do something else besides Batman and Superman. And, do something else.
Please.
How many Supermans can we actually, how many Batmans can we actually have? I mean, that's kind of.
I'm worried about this new Superman. I don't know. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I'm worried.
Well, you know what? No matter what, I'm going to go see it.
Yeah, that's true. Same here.
Regardless of what, I like the fact that the trailer seems decent. Yeah. I do like the fact that they're incorporating the dog, which I don't think anybody's ever done that before. So that seems real cute. I want to see how that works out. I want to see how true they're going to stay to the comic book, which is always questionable with even Marvel, how true. Because it's people don't really know. Most people go on consumers. They don't know. They don't know what's happening. Whatever you put in front of them, that's what they see. And so they'll go and look at it and say, oh, that was great. And somebody who knows the story is like, what are they doing? That is
right.
That's so far. So most people today don't know. I have it's just like with music. I have a younger cousin back in the day. She was singing this song from Mary J. Blige, Your Life, My Life. And she said, oh, that's a good song. I said, well, you know, it's a remake. And she's like, no, that's not a remake. That's Mary J. Blige. I'm like, oh, Jesus. So they don't know.
Yeah. The respect for the source material is something that's always important to me, just because I believe firmly in that was someone's art that they poured into. And, you know, you bought the IP, but try and show them some respect to what they did and respect for the fans that fell in love with that source material. That's why you're making a movie about it. But it's interesting to see how some do it well. I feel like probably one of the best was Tony Stark and Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. was perfect. He really captured Iron Man really well. And then there have been some that I don't like. Not crazy about the new Batman. You know, it didn't feel like it was kind of true to who I think Batman is. But, you know, we'll see how they do with the new Superman. I do have a question about, you know, you've worn a lot of different hats in your industry, director, producer, writer. How do you view the current film industry for indie filmmakers? What are some great things about the industry for indie filmmakers, and what are some challenges that they're facing?
So when I started in this world of chaos, there were not a lot of black filmmakers. It just wasn't a lot. This industry, if I'm being honest, filmmaking is really an industry of somebody who has a what is the term? Somebody who has a lot of money and they're just kind of like, you know, trying to find themselves. That's really what this industry is. It's not really set up for people who have a vision and they're going and hustling. That's just not the way it's set up. Because you think about it, the way the pattern used to be back in the day, you do music video, then you do a short film, and you know, you do a couple of short films, and maybe you can get to doing a feature. That's not really conducive to making money.
Right.
So you have to have already had something else in place that allows you just to kind of follow your dream. And so it's even harder when you don't go to film school, because back in the day, the studios would go to the colleges and they would look for people to put them in home video. They look for the young guys and like, hey, we're going to do your home video deal. That was like this clear path.
Right.
Although there is more opportunities to stream stuff in, it's like going to LA and the guy who parks your car, who does your dry cleaning, who serves your food, they're all film producers.
Right. Yeah.
And so it leaves from the idea of monetization, because they figured out how to monetize it, to people really being true creatives who really respect it.
Right.
Why you're doing this. I have filmmakers come to me all the time, which is people who want to do films.
Yeah.
And they have ideas they pitch to me. And it's like, why do you want to do this? Because I want to make some money. I said, if you're trying to make money, this is not really the place that you should be. I mean, it really should be, honestly, a labor of love. If you keep doing it, the money will eventually come. You know, I've been doing this almost 30 years. It wasn't maybe until the past 10 years that I really started making money. You know, so before then, you know, I was a starving artist. And you have to have that kind of dedication of why you're doing something.
Yes.
Instead of just like, I want to make some money, because that's not going to get you anywhere. I guarantee. And even if you do make some money, if you do some viral hit that comes out, which is rare out of the thousands and the millions of movies that come out, will people be looking at that movie 10 years from now?
Right.
Would they be looking at the movie 20 years from now? That's the real flex. That's the flex when you can have something as an indie producer that people look at as retrospect. I did this interview some years ago, and the interviewer asked me, why am I a filmmaker? And normally I have like a canned response of why I'm a filmmaker, but this particular day, the universe put something else in my heart. And I said, because I want to live forever. And I do. You know, through my work and the things that I create, I want to live forever. I'll live, you know, through my kids' lineage. The moment that I look at black and white movies all the time. And at that moment, I have a slice into that filmmaker's what they thought, those technicians, the production designers, and all those people. So they're living now. I can see them, their work now, you know, and I want to have that type of impact. And I think a lot of times, people, especially with the age of Tubi and YouTube, they just do something and they just put it up there, and then it probably, you know, does, if it goes viral, get 1 million. After that, nobody's looking at it. I want stuff to people look at it 10 years from now. They don't may not love it or like it, but they have a comment about it and say, remember that movie? And they keep looking at it because something funny about it or some crazy, or I didn't like that. This is a crazy movie. I want that. That's the effect that I want to have.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's hard. I wish there were more opportunities for independent films and low budget films. I think because of how technology has advanced, I still think that feature films are made for way too much money. I think good movies can be made, but because of the way it's controlled by the unions and such, it's kind of a challenge sometimes if you want to make a decent movie and you only have $100,000 or something like that. You could probably do it if it weren't for certain drawbacks, you know, because of technology, it's just advanced so much. So, you know, I wish there were more opportunities for indie filmmakers to get, you know, a couple hundred grand here, or, you know, to make a little tiny movie. But we'll see. I have some questions about some of the sci-fi movies. I don't know what your take on these are. If you've seen some sci-fi classics, if you're a consumer, is there a particular sci-fi or fantasy movie that's favorite to yours, to what you know love?
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. Okay.
I am a Whovian. I don't know that new term they come up with. I don't know. I'm a Whovian. I've been looking at Doctor Who since I was 7 years old. So
Really?
I'm a big Doctor Who
So
fan.
who's your favorite Doctor Who actor
Four.
wise?
Baker.
Who?
Baker.
Baker. Okay.
Baker. Yes. Matter of fact, I don't think he's in. I think I have room. I have one his scarves
Oh,
that I
really?
have. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh,
Wow, that's
Baker
great.
is my favorite. And I guess that was during the time when I first fell in love with it, you know. The new what I love about Doctor Who, what I loved about it is that it was a very cerebral show. So you had to be able to understand what was happening the prior episodes to really take a following what the current one is. You couldn't just like, I'm just gonna sit in this episode after, you know, and look at it. After about 30 minutes, you'd be like, I have no idea what is going on here. And so I love that about Doctor Who, the ability to you have to be engaged with it, and you have to be like committed to the whole thing to be able to do it. Nowadays, the Doctor Who's now, if you don't know what happened in the last episode, they pretty much gonna kind of like walk you along and you can kind of go through it. I do love the fact that they obviously this is the biggest thing with Doctor Who. I love the fact that they spend money on special effects.
Yes.
Because
Yeah,
back in the day,
they've
Doctor Who.
gotten a lot better. They
Oh,
really
yeah.
have. Yeah, but I do, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, you know, before you could, each episode was almost like a little standalone movie, and it was a kind of, you really didn't have, you wasn't so serialized episodic that you were lost from one episode to the other, for sure. Was it the monsters, the stories, the companions, what, you know, kind of, what pulled you in to Doctor?
One being science fiction, I like all things science fiction. I do like the idea of the alternate idea of way of thinking about stuff.
Okay.
And I like dialogue driven things. And so, and then I like British television too, you know. So the accents and, you know, they're different. They're just on the other side of the pond per se, and they have a different perspective about life and how they approach stuff. And so they're always very intriguing to me. And just the fact that there was a show that talked about science, but entertaining was very interesting to me. Now, remember now, I was a pre-med major, so I was, you know, I love science. And so, although I'm a filmmaker, those things are still deeply rooted inside of me about how the universe works. And it made me think outside the box on how to one, tell stories, and also two, how the universe worked around in relative. Most of those kind of Doctor Who was theoretical, you know, the things they were doing. I mean, the idea of it being large and outside, but that's possible, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that about the show.
Yeah. What, when I say regeneration scene, what is there a particular regeneration scene that hits the hardest for you?
So that was just, I'm in all these Facebook Doctor Who groups. And so somebody brought up the whole idea about the regeneration, because, you know, originally in the Doctor Who series, regeneration was only, I think, 7 times per Doctor.
Right, right. Yeah.
And then when they had the Time War, because they wanted to make a whole franchise, this new franchise, they knew that they could not. This was going to be almost impossible if that was the case. So when they had the Time War and everybody got stuck in the painting, in that loop, it opened up the possibility that you could have unlimited regenerations. And so the debate inside the group was like, they thought that was wrong and should do it. But the alternative is that if everybody just died after 7 regenerations, then we have no Doctor Who. So I'd rather for them to change it than not have Doctor Who. I don't really have any particular regeneration. The current one is crazy. I'm not sure why what they did. That's kind of, I'm confused about that thing. He regenerate to Rose. I'm confused by that. I really am. That is something that I'm sure they'll explain. But just like anytime, when there's a new Doctor Who, we all hate Doctor Who. We all hate them. Oh, they got this new person. Why are they doing that? And then after a while, oh, I kind of like them. And, you know, so you all go through that. Like, I didn't like the when they did the woman doctor. Mm-hmm. I was confused about it because they had never done it before. That was kind of weird. It took a lot to adjust to that, just because there had never been a woman Doctor Who. But I grew to love her. I thought she was good. I mean, I thought she was great and everything. The regenerations that always intrigue me on Doctor Who is the Master's regenerations.
Okay. Yeah.
Those are intriguing to me. Like when they had Misty, I had no idea. I felt something was something when he did, when Misty regenerated and we turned out she was the Master. Oh, that was brilliant. That was probably the best one. You can't top that one. You can't. Yeah. There's no way to top that. Misty being the Master, that was just brilliant. That was just brilliant. Yeah,
that's great. What do you think, you know, if I do a little lightning round on Doctor Who of questions, what do you think?
Oh,
you,
I'll try my best. That?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. I'm going to give you some choices, right? You tell me your favorite. All right. Mm-hmm. Alex or Cybermen?
That's a hard one. My goodness. Cybermen.
All right. Fez or bow tie?
Bow tie.
Okay. TARDIS interior, classic coral or sleek high tech?
Classic.
I'm with you there. Absolutely. Would you survive a Weeping Angels encounter?
No. No.
Me neither. Have you gone?
It's impossible. Just come and get me right now. I'm going to blink my eye. Just get me. Just come get me.
Absolutely. All right. Last one. Which alien species would make the best roommate?
Probably the lizard people. I can't think of the name of the ones.
What's their name?
Yes. I think that they would. Yeah.
Yep. I agree. A few more questions about Doctor Who, because I think it's fascinating. If you look at Doctor Who as on a timeline, all the episodes, I feel like the underlying theme is really just kind of humanity. You know, what kind of lessons do you agree with that, or what kind of lessons about humanity do we learn?
The thing about television back in the day had moral implications, so that was a problem. They sent you through a process of what you should not do. Some remorse, or we learned a lesson at the end of the story. We learned something.
Right.
Since the creation of SpongeBob, that doesn't occur anymore.
Right. Right.
TV shows don't have, they're just events. They're just things that happen. Mm-hmm. Like when I think about Seinfeld, when Larry David pitched Seinfeld, he pitched to the network. This is a show about nothing. Right. That's what you mean. Nothing. Yeah. He said, it's about nothing. And it's really about nothing. You know, there's no moral implication, anything to it. And I think Doctor Who, to a degree, is still, it has some moral implication, but it's more entertaining than anything else. And it does have like a social theme that kind of, you know, whatever agenda that they're trying
but
to
less
push
so
forward.
Nowadays that you think than it was, say, you know, 15, 20
I think,
years ago?
I think time period has a way of telling stories. Okay. They have a way of putting social influence that we don't really think about. And at the time, we don't think about that. And so it was during that time, certain things that the doctor would say that was very political that people don't really think about. because somebody had to write that. Somebody had to write those. But it's not so much on the nose. Now it's very on the nose of what they're trying to say. This is what they're
I
trying
think it's
to.
too on the nose, if you ask me. You know,
Yes, it's a bit much. It's a bit much like they have an agenda, and I get it. And it's about like the new incarnation of Doctor Who, in my opinion, it's too singy. It's like a musical, but it is Disney. So I get it. Even though when they did that, they said, "Oh, we're not gonna Disney just a distributor." No. You get Disney money, and they have a say in what you're doing. So it's a little bit too, like they had that one episode where he was just singing. I know it was the basis. Well, I can't think of who the god was, but they had to sing. But it was too much. It was a musical.
I you know, it's funny you say that because I was just talking to someone about Star Trek: Strange New World, and I'm a big fan of Star Trek, and I've always liked how Star Trek in past, it would kind of subliminally, subtextually tell stories about, you know, cultural progress and acceptance and tolerance, things like that. And I love that about Star Trek. So that, you know, one of the best things about Star Trek is that it paints this picture where humanity in the future, we have it all figured out. You know, humanity's doing great. You know, I love that utopian ideal, you know, that, you know, but it would always tell stories very subtextually. In the latest Star Trek TNG, which I enjoy the series, one of the episodes is a musical. They're singing the whole episode. And I was just like, come on, guys, dial it back. Like, we can do things without being so blatantly preachy and, you know, stuff like that. I think it
Yeah.
tells a
So
story perfect.
you saying that, so let me ask you this question. Are you a Star Trek fan that feels like the canon and the understanding of the soundtrack stopped at the Next Generation? Everything after that is kind of like, you know.
Pretty much. No, you know, no, I think it's some stuff has been really great, but I don't think it's I don't think it can be considered canon. I think that after TNG, now Picard was great, that series. I don't know if you saw that, but Picard was
I
great
couldn't
because
get
it kind
into it. I couldn't get into
the first season was good, second season was and the third season was more like a closure to Star Trek: The Next Generation. Third season was actually really good, I thought. So some stuff is good, but yeah, I'm more a Star Trek TNG kind of guy. I felt like that was really great. I like the original movies, the original series, not so much, but the original movies. But I do like the new Star Trek series. It's just sometimes they go a little over the top.
Yeah, would agree.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. I you know, am curious, you know, if there's anything you can tell our audience about that they should keep an eye out for, or something that they should stream, or anything like that you're working on you can tell us about.
Sure. I mean, I got tons of movies out now, from False Prophets about a woman who started a Ponzi scheme in her father's church. I got a documentary that came out a couple of months ago called Greenwood. It's about the Tulsa race riots. I have, obviously, there's Ebony Hustle 1 and 2. And then I have a Christmas movie that I just finished a couple of months ago called Hard Holiday. It's about, you know, a hard holiday, a woman losing her job right before Christmas and
All
trying to
right.
navigate that. And so you can pick, most people can, you know, I'm very Googleable, and I hate to say percentages when I say that, but if you type in John Wayne SIII, you pretty much can find everything about me. All my social medias are exactly the same,
Great.
so I'm trying to be as easy accessible to people. But as always, I look at it this way: when it comes to people looking at my anything I produce, there's 24 hours in a day, and I'm asking somebody to spend 90 minutes, an hour or so, to look at myself. So I'm always humble about doing it because they don't have to do that. You know, you think of all the distractions in the world, you know, and millions of people have looked at my movies and stuff. And first I always say, like, when I get my statement, I'm like, who is all these people? Who are these people? I'm just like walking around the street, like, who are these people? But I'm humbled by that because they spent, I mean, they didn't have to. And so I'm always humbled.
That's great. Well, we thank you coming on the show. This has been a fun conversation for me, and I hope you let me know how you feel about the new Superman movie after you see it. We'll compare notes. So,
That's to be seen.
all right. Thanks for everyone who's watching. We appreciate you joining us. And as I end every episode the same way, I tell you, for the love of God, stay nerdy. Thanks.